top with Giordano. Two on one. Michael Backlund shoots. Scores!
Penning. Great move. Here is Penning. Shot. Scores!
Comes free to Shane. Locked by Lucic. Ran him over.
And he wins it back to Foley. Scores!
No way! Oh, my! No way!
Kurt Fiddler backhand.
Oh, my!
It is. Now we're waiting.
Slides it in front, scores! Jason
Chimura! Checked in by Matthews, here it is, scores!
5 minutes into overtime, in game five, and McDavid scores! Game winner, series winner, for Connor McDavid!
I have been a murder man for all my life, and I'll be a murder man.
Welcome back to the 2 Mutts podcast presented by Pete's Concrete. I am your host, Joshua Marshall, and we have two very special guests that have been with us before, and they've started their journey and helping a lot of people, and their company Mind Buffs is definitely helping me and many other great people that I know. And we like to welcome Matt Demosek from Mind Buffs to the 2 Mutts podcast. Matt, how's it going?
It's pretty good, Matt. Happy to be here.
Right on. And our next guest is Alex Shankey. Good friends with her from back in the day. We've known each other probably since 2011. So Alex, welcome back.
Crazy. Yeah. Thanks for having us back.
No worries. No worries.
Yeah.
Obviously, we have some breaking news, but before we jump into some breaking news, you know, just kind of your guys' journey, how Mind Buffs has started and where it's at now. I'll throw that to you, Matt, and the excitement. You guys have your own podcast now. There's so many exciting new things that are happening since last time you guys been on with us. So
it's crazy because I think last time we were on, it was wasn't too long after we had actually like started Mind Buffs. So I think it was Alex, myself, and I think two other people on our team. And now it was like a 3-year anniversary, May 1st, and like by September there's going to be like 15 of us on the team. And so it's crazy how quickly we've been able to grow like a really strong team and cover a lot of different areas, from, you know, youth athletics to like professional sports, business, corporate, first responders, like esport. It's been a lot of fun kind of growing our team and being able to kind of have our hands in a whole bunch of different cookie jars. And so I would say that it's been a whirlwind 3-year period.
Yeah.
But because of how like unreal like the people are on our team, it's been relatively stress-free considering like how much you know, we've had to kind of like grow to support a lot of the interests we've had.
Nice. And Alex, to you, throw that pose that question to you and the excitement and where things at and how it's growing too. So
yeah, I think for us, I'm like, we were so like green when we were last on here. So
now you guys are pros.
I know, we were just like, I don't want to say little babies, but in a way, we've grown a lot. And I think Matt has already said it, but like just with our like value system and being able to find like really solid humans to come and join, like our vision has been awesome. And I think without our really awesome team around us, we wouldn't be where we are right now. But I think, yeah, it grew a lot faster than Matt and I had anticipated. And I think, yeah, we've just been rolling with it and it's been going really good. And we're excited to see where things are going to be at in like a couple of years from now.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's been really, really good, I think, on our end. So
yeah, no, that's awesome. It's and I have some friends, we'll keep those names obviously private, but I have a lot of friends that are getting some help through you guys too. And obviously I've been very vocal about my mental health struggles, and and my last session was amazing. And I'm looking forward to my next one on Thursday night. So just for a big game five that we'll see. But
if it's done right the first time, you don't have to redo it. If you get Pete's Concrete to pour your driveway, you don't need a repeat. When your patio is a PDO, you don't need a repeat. When Pete's Concrete fixes your sidewalk, all it takes is once. You don't need a repeat. And if your basement leaks, a Pete's Repair helps avoid a repeat. Get it done right the first time with the colors and textures you want, so you don't have to redo it. For concrete, you can choose Pete's or repeats. Pete's Concrete.
This public service announcement is brought to you by our friends at CDN. Here's a crazy thought. Not all teamwear needs a team logo. Stand out in the crowd and rep your team colors with one of CDN's hockey hats. Listen, these hats are phenomenal. We just got ours a little while ago, and we've been wearing them nonstop. You know when you find a hat you love and you just can't take it off? Yep, that's how we feel with our CDN hat. Every time we wear it out, we get asked, "Where did you get that hat?" I know what you're thinking. How can I get one? Cue the details. Shop online 24/7 at www.wearecdn.ca and use the promo code 2MUTS for 15% off your order. Again, that's www.wearecdn.ca to get your new favorite hat and use the discount code 2MUTS at checkout for 15% off your order. Now back to the show.
Our NHL News and Notes segment is brought to you by Sheena Boychuk. Yes, you heard that last name, right? That's Sheena Boychuk. As a licensed realtor, Sheena has you covered to buy and sell your home in this hot market. She also offers home consulting services to help you upgrade your living space. Check her website out at SheenaBoychuk.com and tell her the 2MUTS podcast sent you. Realty by Design, your design approach to real estate.
Coach Rupper here from 2MUTS. Thanks for tuning into the podcast. Now let's grab a knee. Have I got a deal for you? We have teamed up with Manscaped and we can save you some big time coin this upcoming NHL season. Guys, are your sticks and pucks getting hairy in the corners? And gals, is your goalie still using horsehair Coopers? Well, let's wake up! Use the code 2MUTS to save 20% plus free shipping on Manscaped products. Listen, we all love to score and we all want to win the cup. Why not do it on a fresh, clean, smooth sheet of ice? That way we all win. Manscaped is the only way to go. Again, the code is 2MUTS to save 20% plus free shipping on Manscaped products. Now let's bring it in. Manscaped on three. One, two, three.
The Masterton Trophy was unveiled today, and both you men have done really great work on the space of mental illness. Your book, obviously, Justin, you talk a lot about it. Luke and Mitsoff, you've done some really nice work on this. It's really neat to see Connor Ingram get the Masterton Trophy. He's a goaltender, obviously, who's worked his way back to top of his game, player of the week in the NHL this year. The Masterton is for perseverance. And Connor from Imperial, Saskatchewan, him winning it with OCD and admitted struggles with depression. His whole openness and vulnerability has been a big part of his great year in Arizona. So I'll start before we get to your dad, Justin. Number 19, Masterton, we're watching Dallas tonight. Nobody wears that number in Dallas because of Bill Masterton succumbing to a head injury in 1968. I know when Brad Richards came over, he went to 91, Sagan and so forth. Masterton was a very special man, and I'd just love to hear your thought on Connor winning it.
I just think it's really cool. I love how guys are getting more open and honest and vocal about it. It's something that when I entered pro hockey in 2009, it wasn't really talked about a lot. It was something you dealt with on your own in a private space. And now it's becoming more accepted with you and your teammates. And I just love where we've come. And we've come so far with the space and with mental health stuff.
Yeah, the programs the NHL has offered, we saw Nichushkin recently step away and try to get some help. They've been really great. And these players, I think, are more welcoming that the league is there to help them. And so good for Ingram for sort of leading the way and showing guys he found his way back and had a great year.
And part of it, your dad, Bob, you write about his struggles. You know, he was one of the most popular, dependable NHL players, a champion so many times over here with Los Angeles. He's recognized by Sports Illustrated. It's unbelievable in 1987 for all his great work. It didn't come without a price, but I love your dad and the fact that he won the Masterton Trophy. I'd love to hear you on that.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I'll take my kids to the Hall of Fame this weekend. They haven't been yet, so they'll see Grandpa's name on that. And the Sportsman of the Year thing was a lot of charitable work that my dad did too. So, yeah, you know, long career, you meet a lot of people. It's pretty cool. I know he's still very proud of those things.
We're going to be doing the hockey theme here. And Ron McLean's a friend of our podcast. I just played this clip for you guys before, you know, Hockey Night and the interview started. So I'll try to find the audio here, but you guys kind of heard it before we hit record. And the theme is here is, so everyone knows that the Bill Masterson Trophy in the National Hockey League, it's awarded for perseverance and dedication to the game of hockey and what you fight through. And Matt, for you, Connor Ingram is the first winner of this award and what he's fought through in his own struggles and his OCD. We are making huge strides, but can you elaborate on like how great this is for the game of hockey, for sports, to see someone win this trophy where it hasn't been won before in a way of someone opening up about their vulnerability and mental health?
Yeah, like, I mean, to be honest, I'm still a little like stunned right now, because I feel like even when we were having like these conversations with you the first time we were on here like 2 years ago, from like then to now, I feel like the NHL has been able to like create a space for talking about mental health in a way that was just not there a few years ago. And I feel like the speed at which even like analysts and former NHL players and current NHL players are starting to be more open about like their struggles with mental health and just what they've had to do to be able to kind of like overcome those things to be a professional. It's crazy seeing how quickly those conversations have come along in the last 2 years, and to see Ingram recognized for the work that he's done to be able to work on himself, not just from like the mental health side, as he was saying, but by being like, as Alex and I say, like a neural spicy person. You got your OCDs, you got your autism, you got your ADHD. Oh my God, we work with so many people from the neurodiverse community. And obviously a goalie is going to be neural spicy because, you know, they're weird.
Yeah.
So,
yes, they are.
Yeah.
So I just love that they're like celebrating the fact that he had those experiences. It's not like what defines him or anything like that, but that even though he had these potential limitations, he was able to, like you say, persevere. That's what the Bill Masterton's for. So to be honest, I'm kind of flabbergasted and really excited that the NHL is honoring that particular perseverance.
Yeah, it is amazing. And obviously me being around the Calgary Flames this year and seeing Oliver Shillington come back after a year and a half away from hockey, and he was a nominee too, but I know Oliver would be happy for Connor winning it. And Alex, to you, your thoughts on obviously such a great accomplishment, and like Ron McLean says in the clip, you know, Connor Ingram was a player of the week this year too, and he did a really good job holding the net for a tough situation in Arizona. On top of that and everything that he has to fight with, you know, how special is this for the sector of mental health in our world, Alex?
I agree with what Matt had said just a couple seconds ago. Again, we just found out like 20 minutes ago that this happened.
Still shocking, right? So,
yeah, exactly. But so I think for me, we work with a lot of younger athletes, or at least from my experience as well. And it's really nice to see the younger athletes, especially like hockey players, even like soccer, like any of the sports, be like, oh, so I don't have to be perfect, or like, oh, this isn't something that is just happening to me. Like, it almost like creates a unified experience. So when we have pro athletes being able to be vulnerable and to share those like vulnerable stories, it, I think, really helps the younger athletes persevere too, in a way, through some of those limitations and those challenges, to realize that they're not alone, and pros also go through stuff.
Yeah,
right? So I think it definitely creates a larger impact with those younger sporting communities.
And we can see in the sport when our young gen athletes are looking up to these players, you know, on the ice, and now they see something that this player did on the ice, but he wants something off the ice. That's just going to mean a lot more, and it's going to be an ally and a helpful resource to be like, hey, I know you went through this. He went through this too. It's something to look at. We all look at Connor McDavid and Leon Draisaitl and the top players, MacKinnon, Makar, as these great athletes that can do all this great stuff. But, you know, I think it says something, doesn't it, Matt, to this, what, you know, Connor's going through here and what, you know, younger athletes can kind of relate to now.
Yeah. Like that was such a good point. I think that's something that, specifically with like professional hockey players, that was a little bit behind with some of the other pro sports, was like having more open, like dialogue about their relationship to mental health and like kind of those struggles. And I think that having this award being given out to Ingram is that official statement by the NHL that like our culture has changed. These are things that everyone goes through, and it's not something to be ashamed of. It's not something to feel like you're weak about for going through. And I think the other thing is like, you don't have to hide it from your teammates or your coaches, because so many young athletes won't talk about these things because they'll think that, you know, the coaches will take away ice time, or they won't be able to, you know, have a spot next year because the coach is going to see them as some kind of like liability. I mean, these are the things that like our minor hockey athletes or junior or college athletes, these are things that they share with us. So like the idea of like picturing a bunch of like beauty mullet haired boys talking about mental health in the dressing room, like after the game, that's just the sickest thing ever.
Yeah, it is, isn't it? Yeah, it sure is. Alex, how do you think that, you know, translates over and as the way that even the women's game's going too, Alex, and how great mm-hmm. it is for the PWHL and mm-hmm. that resource too, and just being, and I think the PWHL is doing an amazing job. They need more.
They're killing it.
Yes.
They're like, oh, it's insane.
Yeah, it's yeah. so good, isn't
it's
it?
It's so good.
Yeah. No,
I know. Yeah, a lot of us have had a lot of conversations about the PWHL, but they're doing a great job, and like people are excited.
Yes.
People yeah. are
they're
excited.
Selling out rinks everywhere they go. Like yeah. League is going to grow more than six teams very soon, in my opinion.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Yeah, it will for sure. But yeah, it's just, it's booming, and it's just really great to be able to, yeah, see all of that and be a part of it.
Yeah.
Right. Especially to watch it from the beginning too. So I think it's really cool. And I'm pumped to see what happens.
It is. Yeah. And something pretty cool. Like obviously Natalie Spooner, everyone knows how great of an athlete she is. Mm-hmm. And she just had a kid and then just got drafted and then played and scored all these goals. This mm-hmm. Alex, like how, you know, kind of will translate over to, you know, what we're going to kind of talk about with a lot of different athletes. But I think we can give Natalie Spooner some play here in terms of what she had to fight through and overcome, but get it back on the ice and be one of the top athletes and score as many goals as she has this year. Alex, what are your thoughts on that, and what your thoughts of Natalie Spooner as a player too?
Can I pause? This is for Cam. Did you yeah. guys hear the alarm going off?
No.
No. Okay. Sorry. It was going off and I got super distracted. Gosh, it says alarm alert, alarm alert. Please vacate the area immediately.
Okay. I'm surprised we didn't hear that.
So sorry. Can you ask me that again?
Yeah. No, no, for
but
sure.
I'm
no
not
worries.
Yeah. Trying to
panic and have one foot out the door.
I was
so.
A little panicked. I was like, oh no. Okay. Yeah. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, obviously with Natalie Spooner's gone through in terms of being one of the great athletes and then, you know, having to put her career on hold and, you know, being a mother, but then when that's all done, obviously still being a mother, but when the pregnancy's done and then getting back to being one of the top athletes, and we'll get your thoughts on this too, Matt, but throw it to Alex first. Like, what are the things that you can relate or see through or talk about that, you know, could be something that's really helpful and a resource for her to kind of still find her way and being one of the great athletes? Cause she was an amazing player this year for the PWHL mm-hmm. and what she did on the ice and growing, helping grow in the game and not picking and picking up where she's pretty much left off and scoring a lot of goals too.
Yeah. I think, well, there's a couple things. One, becoming a mother, it's a part of your identity, right? Just like hockey's a part of a hockey player identity, right? And so there's different aspects. And the way I like to think about it is like when Shrek is like ogres are like onions and we have to pull them all apart, right? That's my metaphor I like to use. Yeah. You're adding something else that's really, really important. But I also know from a team perspective, you're used to being around family and creating those connections and relationships, right? But I also know, and this is going to relate to the Kane stuff later, that when you take that time off, it's hard to go back, whether it's like pregnancy, injury, or anything like that, right? Your body's gone through massive changes. And then to be able to go back, right? Mm-hmm. There's expectations. And it sounds like she was able to, and we saw it too, be able to meet those expectations again. And I know she probably put in a lot of work behind the scenes to be able to come back as strong as she did.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Very well said. Matt?
Yeah.
Yeah. I just think so much of the narrative around like women in sport has changed. You know, obviously there's a lot of media attention about women in sport and trans in sport. And like, that's a whole other big like conversation, but I think just realizing that Like when women are given the same amount of like time and resources to be able to become like high performance machines, that like they are capable of way more than so much of like the sporting world, I think, like understood. And from like Olympic like track athletes to like Spooner, like there's been a lot of cool stories just looking at how like women have been able to, you know, fit in pregnancies in between Olympic seasons and be able to like get to that top level without like missing a beat while being able to focus on other aspects of their life. And I think that's what Alex was hinting at, is that there's this I think misunderstanding with high performance athletes that you have to be like completely obsessed with it to be able to make it to that level, that it needs to be like your only thing in life. And there are obviously some rare, unbelievable all-stars in all sports that that's definitely what they do, but they're like they're the genetic wonders. They're like the 0.00001s. Most people can have a really like well, like broad and like wide foundation of identity and still be able to kick ass. But honestly, with the PWHL, there's just this one little story I wanted to share. We were talking with some of our other psychologists on the team, and one of our colleagues was had a first session with a new young hockey player. I think she was like 10 or 11 years old. And our colleague asked her, like, what's your goal? Like, what do you want to be able to like achieve? And she's like, I want to play in the PWHL. And it's just like, oh my God, like it's just so cool. It's happening.
That's amazing. It's there, right? And it's taken a while to get to the process of them getting a league with, you know, there's two different leagues, and it was like, is the NHL going to support it, or the players going to support it? And it's grown a lot over the years, where obviously they were showcased at All-Star games, and we all know what they've done at the World Hockey Championship level and the Olympic level. Now they have their own league to showcase what they can do during a season, and you know, selling out rinks is quite amazing for sure. So we'll move over to Mitch Marner, and obviously Rick Adam Oates. Everyone knows how great of a hockey player he was. You know, was an Edmonton Oiler too, and what he does now in helping players on their skill development. And I'll try to use the clip here, but if it doesn't work, maybe you guys heard it before. But for our fans, you know, here's a clip from the Andy Cam and Strick podcast. Andy Strickland and Cam Jansen. Alex, actually, you served Cam Jansen at the ranch one time when the Devils came in. So,
Probably.
yeah, that was the night where
That was many moons ago,
actually, that was just last year, Alex.
yeah,
Don't lie.
that was the night you got a picture. I took a picture of you and Marty Brodeur. So, I don't
That is
know.
true.
That was
I
a good
couldn't let him just walk. I don't
Oh, you
know,
couldn't, yeah. So, but yeah, maybe you didn't want me to put you on the spot on that. But anyway, it's a good podcast, but that they have here, and this is kind of the clip Adam Oates has here. So hold on.
Okay.
Is that his fault? Their power play was 1 for 20.
Yeah.
Is that his fault?
No. I that's what I was
Whose?
going to ask you. Is it all his fault? Like, does he take too much
Well,
heat?
whose?
Well, he's part of the power play.
Yeah, he's part of it. Yeah. So this is once again, a slippery slope. Who's helping him? Who's giving him a lifeline? That's an incredibly difficult market, as we know.
Yeah.
So Matthews only got one. Tavares only got one. Nylander only got one. He only got one. So why is he the fall guy every year, right? And yeah, he's got to take some responsibility himself, of course.
11 million.
Of
That's
course.
probably why
Yeah.
they look at his salary,
Yep.
right?
Yeah. So here's another thing too. So like, let's say the D doesn't break them out. Let's say because we got four front-loaded contracts, our D don't break us out. That Marner's fault? Tough to produce when we don't get the puck past him.
And there's another clip
Like
here.
when Nylander yelled at him. Well, Nylander, first of all, you don't play against everybody's best. You play against everybody's second best. Let's get that straight. Number two, he was mad at Matthews for a bad turnover at the blue line. That's what he's mad at. And he's also mad and he threw his gloves. Why? Because he knows tomorrow in the paper, they're going to blame him. Like the power play was 1 for 20. If they're 5 for 20, they'd still be playing right now. And he'd have three more points, four more points. They wouldn't be complaining right now, would they? So therefore, now you're going to look at the power play. Of course. Well, that's two units, 10 guys and one coach, right? And the head coach. So like it's never one guy. And I feel bad for him because he's in that market, right? That makes it very difficult. And then the winning goal, Pasternak's goal, they're blaming him. And it's like, if anybody knows anything about hockey, they were in a neutral zone regroup. So the F1 changed. He jumped over for F1. Pasternak's not his responsibility at all.
So obviously that was a pretty good clip that Adam Oates had. Yeah. Now earlier today, as everyone knows, a full disclosure, I'm a Toronto Maple Leaf fan. Yes, it's torment that I get every year from that. But we've had Jeff O'Neill and Jamie Noodles McLennan from TSN Overdrive on our podcast. We're in the works of getting Brian Hayes on, and I was listening to them today. They played this clip just like I did. I'm gonna ask the question to you, Matt, first, and give your thoughts of what you thought of that clip, but also the context that Jeff O'Neill said. He thinks that was personable, in meaning that Adam Oates was now privy to information by Mitch Marner to go out on a podcast to defend him in a way. Would you have taken it that way? And then what are your thoughts of this situation with Mitch Marner getting the heat that he does in a hot market in Toronto too?
So my initial thought was, I think, similar to O'Neill and those guys' take. I don't know about like whether he got permission, but the first thing I really thought was like, oh my God, like Oates is going to bat for Marner. Like he's really like standing up for him and like acting as kind of a bit of a shield for all of the crap that Marner like takes in that market. So like, I love just hearing just the emotion in Oates's voice and just being like, I'm sick and tired of this, of like him always being the whipping boy, like being the scapegoat in Toronto. I mean, I loved the passion that Oates had there. And I think with Marner, the unfortunate thing for him is kind of like twofold. I think one is like the contract. So as soon as you have a contract that size, the media is just going to have the most perfectionistic microscope on you and demand that you do everything right and everything perfect all the time, especially in playoffs. And I think the other thing that happens in pro sports is that the personalities on a team that are most different from the stereotypical hockey player, stereotypical basketball player, whatever the sport is, I think like they too get overly scrutinized because they're like, they don't fit the mold. And I think when you look at like the, even like the top four, Tavares, Matthews, Nylander, I think you could really argue that Marner is the least like stereotypical hockey player of those four guys. So I think there's also an extra bit of attention that's paid to him in the same way, to be honest, about Kane in Edmonton.
Yeah.
I think because his personality is so wildly different than the stereotypical hockey player that anytime they do one little thing just a hair off perfect, they're always going to be the first guys that are noticed by media and honestly by fans sometimes. And then you put that in a Toronto or an Edmonton market where like cheering for those teams is some of the most important, exciting things for a lot of the people in those cities. Yeah, it's one of the hardest positions to be in the public eye, to be a Marner, to be a Kane. So I really feel for Marner in that way.
Yeah. Alex, your thoughts on kind of the situation. Now, we don't know, because most of the players keep their this information private on if Adam Oates helps them out. Some guys are more vocal about it than others. So I don't know if Marner has hired Adam Oates to be a skills coach. I think people are looking into that now, and we might find that out tomorrow with the insiders, because this has gotten a lot of traction. I reshared it, and it blew up my timeline on Twitter. But what you heard there, Alex, and kind of what you know and seen through the last 8 years of Marner's career in Toronto, too.
Well, first and foremost, the stuff the Toronto Maple Leafs have to go through is wild, just with how intense their fan base is and like the expectations, and like when playoffs roll around, like it's a lot. I would say, compared to some of the other NHL teams that you would see.
I would jump on that in a way because what we were talking about this today, I was texting with O-Dog about it, because the game seven Boston versus Toronto, that in the US did 3.2 million views of on ESPN, and in Canada it was almost around 4 million. So you bring those together, and not to like, it's not a slight against Edmonton or some of the other markets, but the next closest series that had anything in the over a million was 1.7 million views of the Oilers elimination game against the LA Kings. So The numbers prove that, the demand is high there. It's just like you would see with the Dallas Cowboys in football, right? Like, are you going to pick, you would love to see Dallas versus the Cowboys versus the Chiefs on Christmas Day.
Yeah.
But Kansas City might not get a Christmas Day game, but the Dallas will, because, they're going to do good. And a reason I say is, this is the first year the NFL, Christmas is on a Wednesday this year, and there's two NFL games this year on Christmas Day. So
Really?
Yeah. So it's like they've now taken over that. They always left that to the NBA. They're now NFL is now taking that day too now. Yeah. So it's just crazy because the ratings and the demand for viewership is high, right? So I kind of cut you off there, Alex.
No, that's okay. But
if you can, sorry, go ahead, finish your thought
on that. No,
apologies.
It's okay. Just that then the expectations, I think, change for a lot of those players that even go into those cities. As Matt had said, like, you know, we have Kane and Edmonton that, again, they do something wrong and everybody's like losing their shit. And you're like, come on, guys, like it's a game too. And just the rivalries in that Toronto, like you have Boston, like there's so many in there too that it just amplifies everything. And so Marner, from what I've seen and what I've read, again, he's kind of the scapegoat, right? In some way, shape, or form. And that makes it harder, I would say, right? And then I mean, mentally too, right? Like you're now going into games, having these expectations to perform, and then it can shift a lot of things, right?
Yeah, I don't want to potentially like derail maybe where you want to go with this conversation, but yeah. I have like a sports psych hot take I kind of wanted to get off my chest.
Go ahead. Yeah.
About the Leafs.
Okay.
So when you look at the fact that like the core of that group has been together like all of these years and had all of these like near like misses happen, you know, there's a cultural trauma like to that core group that like when playoffs roll around, whether they are consciously aware of it or not, whether or not they're like talking about it, like over dinner, like before playoffs are coming, like there's going to be this extra heightened sense of pressure and fear that it might not be mental, might not be emotional, but like their bodies remember. Everyone's bodies remember. And so when like this core group goes into the playoffs, there's this extra collective pressure of like, I don't want to like mess up this year. Like we can't mess up this year. Like this has to be the year that we perform. And I think you're just seeing like more and more just like the scar tissue of like trying their hardest, but just the weight of all that pressure, just getting the best of them. I mean, they're just human at the end of the day, but I think it's important to kind of note that there's a lot of past that they're trying to like carry forward. And it's a big burden.
I think it's very well said there, because I think what we saw on the bench in Game 4, you know, it was a offensive zone faceoff that they had. All three were out there together. That was the play broke down. Now, obviously, I think Adam Oates is privy. I think he was fed some information either through Marner or someone close to Marner to either go out and defend him. But the fact was, all three were on the ice for an offensive zone faceoff. They're down 3-0. And this is the first time as a Leaf fan you ever saw them argue on a bench. They've never done this before, ever. And we've seen issues throughout the year. And obviously we'll get to Evander Kane and how that is and isn't, because I do think somewhat, and it'll be a great conversation on Evander Kane, but to finish up on this kind of Marner stuff, I agree with the trauma, because I think at times, I don't know, you guys can correct me, you guys are way more closer and professional in this situation than I am, but I think, you know, at least from my dealings of trauma, when it kind of gets to a boiling point, it boils over. Like it just, it gets to a point where you're like, hey, you bottle it, and then you blow over. And I don't think it's wrong to think that was what was happening on the bench, where all three were going at each other, where they're looking at the score. It's Game 4. They're going to lose this game. They're going to be down the series 3-1, and they're getting blown out in their own rink, and they're going to go in the third period down 3-0. And it's all that trauma from before. It's the Columbus 100%. Series, it's the Montreal series, it's the Boston series before, it's all that, you know, in the Tampa series. So I do think it's that. The thing is also, all four of these guys are kind of somewhat wired the same way. I'm not saying I disagree with, like, Marner isn't the typical protocol hockey player type, but at the end of the day, the way all these guys are wired, like Marner, Matthews, Nylander, Tavares, they're not going to do what Pasternak did with Matthew Tkachuk the other night, where they're going to look at their coach and say, can I go fight him, and then drop the gloves at center ice. They're just not going to do that.
Yeah.
Now, Matthews got into a fight last year with Stamkos in the playoffs, but that was no choice to get into that fight. Stamkos was going to beat the crap out of him regardless if they're going to drop the gloves or not. So, yeah, no choice to take the gloves off and try to defend himself. But I do think, as a Leaf fan, from watching it and my experience of trauma from before, I think when it boils up, it just boils over. And I think it was, I thought it was a positive thing, and it kind of seemed like it was a positive thing, because they got it to a Game 7, but the outcome was still the same. They lost. So the trauma is more deeper, because that's what trauma does. They they show it like it's all over. I would rather it have ended in five and not have to deal with the game seven and overtime.
Yeah.
But as a fan, but it is what it is. That's what they do. They bring us into the most losing in the most devastating way as possible. But yeah. I agree, like, and you played at a higher level than I did, Matt. But Oates is not wrong on the F3 part. Is his guy. So
yeah,
I think maybe the concerning part is, and obviously Jeff O'Neill, Jamie McLennan, and Odaw and Hayes all said the worst part of that clip was that if that's what he thought on the bench before he threw his gloves in terms of thinking that the media is going to come after him, because this will translate over to our Evander Kane situation. That might be the worst thing you want, is to try to get over that. And it didn't help. Yeah. You know, when Marner's deal was up, his dad went on Leafs lunch and clammed, like, you know, he should get the same as Matthews. He should be this. And then he gave it to him and he was the hometown kid. I think it all stems from being the hometown kid who didn't take the discount. He took the most amount of money possible and he didn't sign an 8-year deal. So it, like, I think that's where it all comes back to with the fan hatred towards him. So
fair enough.
Yeah. So I don't know if you guys want to add anything to that before we move on to Evander Kane, but
I'm just going to add the fan stuff. Yeah. Like, I follow Toronto, but not as much as you, Josh, but everyone's like, oh, they better get out of the first round this year. So there was like some more added like pressure, I feel like, this year compared to other years that I think really brought out some of that. Yeah. Like scar tissue, Matt was saying. Mm-hmm. This year in the playoffs. And I think even when I was watching the Toronto Boston, like you could see a lot of that hesitation and just their energy on the bench and like emotional intensity that they had. It seemed like it was not how they would normally play.
No,
in my opinion.
And I would agree with that, Alex. I would agree with that wholeheartedly. So it did kind of play scared for at least the early part of that series. I think once it kind of got to 3-1 and Joseph Woll came in, it was kind of like, what do we have else to lose here? If we lose five, we're losing five. Now we're just playing with house money. And they didn't have Matthews, and they're playing with another kind of somewhat rookie goaltender. But let's finish up and move over to Evander Kane. I think for the most part, this guy, he kind of gets the wrong narrative is out there on him, in my opinion. Yeah. I don't know where you guys stand on that. I've dealt with Evander in the last 2 months here. We posted something on our Twitter account. We talked about some stuff on our podcast. He came at us pretty hard, more or less me pretty hard, because, you know, as Elliot Freeman taught me, if it's your thing, you're the one getting the flack for it. So it's something I guess I started 5 years ago with this podcast. So my name is attached to it in terms of like who's the guy you want to run to go talk to. So he came at me very justified. So we buried the hatchet, but there still has been like a little bit back and forth between us lately, because a lot of it is like, he really, really does listen to everything that is said about him and everything that's read about him. Like, he'll listen to this interview. This interview will get to his ears and he will listen to this. He'll either watch it and I'll hear something. Cause anytime we tag him in something or his name is into something, he gets to him. And we have some mutual friends that they listen to our podcast and they always send it to him too. And that's kind of how it has happened. But I think for the most part, I think what happened in the other organizations, maybe the leadership wasn't there, Matt, that was there to support him through the struggles that he had. Mm. I don't know where you're at with him. I know I'm kind of going all over the place, but
I'm with you.
You know, from afar, but from what you also kind of can read, but also understanding an athlete too, in terms of like how that can affect. Obviously, the injury that he had, a hernia injury, is not very fun to play through or go through.
No.
But you got to give him credit that he didn't say, you know, put me on the shelf for several months. I know that went on. People here listen to you talk, but where are you at with it?
So I think that the first thing I want to say before I kind of like share my like personal opinion, I want to just like state that it's like a personal opinion, is like, I'm not going to get into like mind theory. I'm not going to pretend to know exactly what Kane thinks and exactly what he's gone through. I have the same information that most people have, which is like kind of what the media is willing to show. But you know, the reason partly why I wanted to kind of like share the little anecdote about like, you know, Marner being a bit of a different like cat than the typical guy is like, I think Kane his entire life has had to fight against stereotype, has had to fight against like not being that normal hockey player. And you throw the fact that he has a really unique personality on top of the fact that he's always been a really skilled athlete, and that as a young athlete who's given a lot of fame and a lot of attention, as for someone who's still 12 years away from developing like the most important part of their brain, the prefrontal cortex, it's like you're going to make decisions and do things that are not going to be made with a lot of like forethought. Every human being in that situation is going to do that. But I think because of like some of those extra factors, again, like Kane is just such an easy target for the media. I love what you mentioned about how in some of the previous teams or markets that he was in, that perhaps he didn't have like a supportive like leadership group who could really like bring him into the culture. I think that when you look at the roster and some of the personalities that were on some of those other teams, he was probably the biggest personality on the team. So I love the fact that he's got guys like Ekholm and Dry and McDavid who can be there to potentially like protect him and insulate him. He doesn't have to be the guy who's always in the light. I feel for him because it's not fair that he's still kind of painted with this brush of him being the bad boy and like up to no good. And yeah, it really like makes me angry because he's clearly been a really like helpful and supportive like piece to this locker room, to this organization. So yeah, I have like a million other thoughts, but like that's my brief first synopsis.
Yeah. Do you want to elaborate more before we throw to Alex on some other things? Like, obviously, what we've seen, what he's done, I think her name's Cecily, you know, the young lady that's fighting cancer, you know, him kind of being partnered with the Ben Stelter Foundation, too, in terms of getting his name out there and being out there. I think the stuff that he's done with Walmart and in terms of providing, you know, toys and obviously groceries for kids that can't afford, you know, the essential needs to fill up their household with groceries and also toys, like, last year with him at the James H. Brown, the best story I loved about him last year, like he had the wrist injury and he does this event at Walmart and there's 150 kids going there and they're given $250 and they were in the toy section and half the kids, if not 70% of the kids left the toy department, went to the grocery department because they knew that they needed groceries more than they needed toys. And then they got an extra additional $250 on top of it. So they got $250 for toys and they got $250 for food. And he realized that, he saw that, and he acted on that. But when that happened, what did he do? He faced flack for it because it was like, oh, he's trying to do that. So I think it's just one of those more, you know, he can't do any right. I told him in person
totally.
Like when I talked to him, I said, you can don't, like PK Subban donate $10 million to Children's Hospital. You can donate $10 million to the Children's Hospital. And people are going to be like, why did you donate 20? Like that's the narrative that would be out there on him, whether it's right or wrong. I would
completely
say
completely. And that's what I'm just pissed off about is just like the assumptions that people think that they have the right to like make about someone that they only get like one tiny aspect of their life, that like when Kane actually goes out of his way to reveal his true character and like some of those other parts of himself that are like really amazing to see, people like automatically think that there's an angle to it, that like he's doing it for like his image or like for some kind of like self-protection. Like it's a bunch of bullshit. Like clearly there is like a real human being there that cares. And you even saw on, I think it was ESPN or TNT, that like he was defending the Edmonton fan base and like defending like the culture here. Like, you know, he clearly cares about being here and is proud about being an Oiler. You know, the other thought I had, and again, like this is just like objectively and obviously based on working with lots of other people who have like been like pro athletes that we've worked with or just like been like in the media a lot, is that when you grow up and like people are always freaking criticizing you, like always making comments about you, always judging, it is impossible not to like have some part of you that's kind of like in that fight or flight that's just waiting for the next stupid thing to happen, the next stupid comment to happen. And like the fact that like Kane has to like kind of bear like that weight of all that bullshit in the past and still be able to like perform in his games, like it's probably even more difficult for him to get into flow state because like any little mistake that he makes in the game could be some kind of like stupid headline. And again, I don't know if that's what he thinks or what he feels, but in terms of how people's brains are wired, like, yeah, he's got to be on alert that someone's just going to make some false comment about like the motive or intention behind like what he did or didn't do. So yeah. He has it tough, man.
Yeah. Alex, your thoughts. We've kind of rambled on here.
Sorry. I have so many. I was trying to take the feelings. Yeah. I want to go.
It was something we really wanted to do a whole podcast on, but you know, we'll throw to you. We got all the time here, but
I'm going to try to keep it short, but there's like two main ones that I want to talk about. Yeah. So one is like spiraling off of like what Matt had said. So when I obviously don't know Evander Kane at all. I've never talked to him, but again, looking at Again, like what we see in the games, interviews, all of those things. So taking from that, I was actually at the game 3 against Vancouver, where they ended up losing that game, which I was very upset about, but besides the point. When I go to games, I see a lot more of what's happening out there, and I get to, yeah, I don't know, for some reason, I just take a lot more than through the TV. So when I go to games, I often look at like how people are on the bench, what they're doing, body language, how they handle like setbacks and like mistakes, and what they're doing to like get back into like flow state or the zone. And so in that game, particularly, I forget, there was a specific turning point. I think it was in the second where everybody just like deflated. Everybody went, the whole bench was quiet. The arena was quiet. I was like, what is happening? We're letting them down as fans, but also besides the point. And I am, when we look at personality theory, there's thinkers and there's feelers. I am a very high feeler. I call myself a closet feeler. So people don't actually know that I'm taking on all the energy in the space.
Yeah.
I'm very good at masking it. And then some people are more logical, more thinkers, and like logic and emotions just aren't as important to them. And so when I look at Kane, I would assume he's a feeler based on the bench. And so you have somebody who has a personality type that's going to take a lot of emotion on. And so when we're on a bench, and I'll speak for myself personally, when I'm on a bench, I play soccer, and the team starts to get negative and starts to get super intense, we either like shrivel up into little balls and we're so quiet and we're like, oh my gosh, don't mess this up. Like, I don't want to go out there. Like, what's going to happen? Like, am I going to be on the next headline? Like, what is happening? Mm-hmm. Or we get too animated, which we actually saw, I want to say, with the Corey Perry incident, where you got two guys that are now like over the top and overstimulated. Mm-hmm. And so when I look at Kane and I look at what's happening, at least in game 3, it's a pattern that happens, right? Our brain creates patterns, and that's what its goal is to keep us alive. So patterns are easy. And I think he goes through a lot, and there's so many expectations of him in the media of like, oh, you didn't do good that game. Why? Right? Or why are you so pissed off in this interview? Right? And it's like, well, we're just trying to process some of those really, really big emotions that we feel. And I think he gets way too much flack for it. We're human. We can be emotional, and some of us are just more emotional than others.
Yeah. I think the two incidents, obviously the one earlier with Drysdale, there was three, but the first ever one wasn't, I guess, captioned on TV, but the one in Toronto was, and then the one in Calgary was.
Yeah.
The two things that stood out to me there is like, I actually kind of felt bad in the moments of watching it, because he's the guy getting yelled at, and he's the guy that can't defend himself, because if he bites back the way Leon's going at him, or bites back the way Kane goes at, or Perry goes at him, it's like, hey, look, he is a problem. Look, he is a problem. He's easily something. Like, I just don't think it gets to that point, whether he is right in a situation or wrong in a situation. Like, they're talking about hockey play, that these things happen all year long, and it doesn't get looked at. It probably definitely doesn't get looked at in a U.S. market, but it gets looked at in a Canadian market. And these are the conversations I've had with him, where it's like, he loves playing in Canada. Like, this guy's building another house to live here. Like, he's not, he has a place, but he's also building another place. Like, he wants to engrave his family here for the rest of, you know, his career, probably up, because he's very bullish on going back to Atlanta. So if they get back to Atlanta before his career's done, that's probably where he wants to retire, is because he loved his time with the Atlanta Thrashers. But you know, when him and I've gone at it, and some of what he said to me and some of what I said to him isn't good. And I know he's gone at it with other media personalities, but he's just trying to defend his name in the best possible way he can, because sometimes you're the only guy that can defend it, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, I know there's narratives out there where it's like, you know, no one's come out and said, this guy's a good guy. And it's just like, I don't know if that's true. You know, I always come back to, it was where he was before, where the leadership was or wasn't, you know, and that state was in flux in Atlanta, and they moved to Winnipeg, and that's the same core that moved over there. You know, there was so much, like, we heard about it, even not without him. Like, when Patrick Laine was with Winnipeg, we heard, oh, he's a problem. It's like, well, how is everyone a problem, but this guy's not a problem? And I'm not trying to say Blake Wheeler was a problem or Dustin Byfuglien was a problem, but Blake Wheeler's the guy that got his seed taken off his jersey, and Blake Wheeler's the guy that got bought out. So it's like, they had to do a cultural change in Winnipeg.
Yeah.
They had to do a cultural change in San Jose. You know, they've had to change captaincies there. I just think in terms of that, you got to look at it and being like, hey, like, again, we're not in the room. We're not privy to everything that we want to be privy to. We're privy to what the media wants us to believe. And that is the problem I think he has in terms of that.
Yeah.
Too. So
I'm going to add to some of that.
Yeah, go ahead.
I watch the post-game interviews, but I struggle with them. So I don't watch all of them.
Yeah.
But some of the questions, and Kane included in this, but a lot of the athletes, the questions are some of them are quite actually disrespectful. So I give Kane props for actually defending himself and like being assertive in those moments, because some of those questions, I'm like, if I was asked that, like, holy moly, I'm a psychologist, and I'd be like, no.
Yeah.
Like, unprofessional, inappropriate. Like, why are you saying those things? So like, I think it's really important for him to advocate for himself too, and to be assertive in those moments, because I actually don't think anybody should have to put up with a lot of the stuff that him and other players have went through.
Yeah.
And it it doesn't bring out the best in the sport and like the cultures and stuff. So like, I mean, all the power to him for clapping back, because I think it's actually really important.
Yeah. Matt, do you want to jump on to that? And
oh my God, like, I have a thought about media. I'm not going to shit on media, but I have like a thought on that. And when you look at like the purpose of like sports journalism, it's to be able to like bring the stories of what's happening, like behind the scenes in the locker rooms, like in that professional space, and to share that with the fan base, share that with the supporters and the people who are like in love with that team or that player. And what drives me crazy are the particular like media personnel who don't care how they treat the athlete to get the story. It just freaking infuriates me, because when you look at just basic human psychology, you are going to get more vulnerability, more juice, more tea, whatever metaphor you want to use, out of a player when that person trusts you, when they feel safe talking to you. So if you're primary objective is to be able to bring really quality stories to the public, then the best strategy to be able to get those kinds of stories and that narrative is by building like an amazing relationship with that person, by showing that like you respect them, that you trust them. And then, you know what, without them having to think, they're going to share something really cool or really personal, because in that relationship, it's safe. It's vulnerable. It's really cool. And so it just drives me crazy when like you look at certain media personalities and they abuse that relationship. Because you can tell that like immediately on the look on the athlete's face when they're talking to someone that they trust, and someone that if they weren't on live TV, you probably would want to punch in the face. Correct. So it just, it just bugs me, because like there are great people in media, but enough bad ones that a lot of media kind of gets painted with that negative brush as well.
And it does in our market. Like I haven't been in the Oilers locker room, but I have access to get into the Flames locker room and the visiting teams that if the Flames play. So I guess on the road, I would have been in that opportunity to get into an Oilers locker room there. But mainly our job with Calgary, based as a Calgary reporter, your job is to stay in the Flames area. You can wander off to the other room if you want to, but you're right. A lot of great conversations happen when this microphone and that camera is not there, and you have good rapport. Like, you know, I have so many, I'm very fortunate for the relationships I've been able to build because of the close thing. And like, you know, for the longest time, we were advocates of Kane. We were posting things on our Instagram account and our Twitter account. And then the one thing I had a problem with in terms of just the situation happened is the one time I said something that probably wasn't really great for him, but some of it didn't have truth. Some of it did have truth. It's just, that's when I kind of heard from him. But 10 other times we talked and pumped his tires, and I took so much flack. Like, so many like random NHL players would DM us on our Instagram account, meaning be like, man, like, and I'm like, where is this all coming from? And it's like players inside the league. And it's like, are you just somewhat jealous? Cause yes, he's a successful guy. He is. And his struggles are well-documented, because not because we documented him, because he had the courage enough to stand in front of a national television microphone and talk about the problems that he had. So, you know, it is tough. I think at the end of the day, I think the conversation can say he's misunderstood in the reasons that shouldn't be. And I think there needs to be more empathy and more compassion. It's the same thing with Valerie Nichushkin. Like, you know, like, we saw how Colorado responded back. They thought he was playing that night. Now they're up 4-3. Kale McCarr is they're up 4-3 right now with 3 minutes left.
And they're not dead yet.
No, they're not. But you know, the game's far from over. But it's just, it goes to a point where it's just like there's a human side of it where I don't think some of the media, and I think it comes back to what you're kind of saying, Matt, is that maybe if the media people understood it, like, you know, I didn't like Mark Spector. I didn't agree with what he put out on Jason Greger's show, you know, like, and I don't even like, to be honest, I don't think Jason Greger really liked it either, because he didn't go down. Like, he let him vent and then Jason Greger went to a different topic real quick.
Yeah.
So I don't think he was getting, that's personable. That's like,
totally.
And I had media people message me and being like, well, that was kind of offline. Right. Whether.
I totally agree. Jason would also like never like want to have engaged conversations like that. So like, I agree. He was just trying to divert that conversation somewhere else. So
Let's finish up on that. Where can people find you guys if people want to get in touch, work with you guys, get some help, resources? Mm-hmm. What's the best way they can contact you guys?
So if you just go to our website, like mindbuffs.com, you'll learn about us. You'll see all the different people on our team, all the different industries that we work with, all the different partners that we have, from sporting organizations to like international like businesses. We work with like large teams. It doesn't really matter where that is, but I think the one thing that Alex and I are like the most proud of as of late is like the podcast that we released in December. I think that we have some really quality conversations about experiences that not only like high performance like professionals go through, but like everyday people. And so if you're someone that just wants to be able to kind of like get the most out of your relationships, out of your career, out of your sport, out of whatever it is, that thing that you love, that you're passionate about, I think our conversations on our podcast are really suited to just helping you understand yourself and your brain better so that you can kind of get more out of your life. And yeah, I'm really proud of the conversations that we have with that. And it's called The Mind Buffs Podcast, keeping it simple. Yeah. So yeah,
you can find it on Apple Podcasts and Spotify too. So we'll tag that in our show notes. So really appreciate you guys joining us for the second time here, and looking forward to the next visit we have down the road. So thank you. Thanks, so much. Josh.
Awesome. Thanks, man. Thanks.
When you hire a contractor, you want things to go smooth. Smooth as a driveway poured by Pete's Concrete. You want a solid guarantee. Solid as a basement floor by Pete's Concrete. You want Pete. Pete's Concrete. For sidewalks, patios, your leaky basement, Pete lays his reputation down with every job, and he offers you finishes and colors you won't find anywhere else. You want someone who proudly puts their name on the work they do. Pete puts his name in concrete. Pete's Concrete.